Okay, awakening is a journey, and this is a talk on my journey from my late 20s to now. Take what you like and leave the rest. Your sovereignty is yours, and it is your right to protect. So whatever doesn't fit, just let it go. We're going to start with a meditation, and I'm just going to invite you all to close your eyes and sort of feel yourselves kind of sinking into your chairs and feeling your feet on the ground. Maybe your temperature. Are you hot, cold? How's your breath? And as you sit there, just allow yourself to sink deeper into your chair and kind of feel this melting sensation, maybe starting from the top of your head down. You feel your face melting a little bit, and then you go through your jaw and it's melting, and your neck's melting, and your arms are starting to melt. And you feel everything sinking down to your chair. Your back is leaning onto your chair, and you feel all the touch points start to get more and more silky or smooth and more soft. And you go through your digestive system and through your legs and down through your feet as you're sinking to the chair. And now, as you stay in this state, I'm going to invite you to see a bubble of light around you. And this light isn't like normal light, it's like milky. It's a milky white color. It is almost of that bubble color. It has hints of pink and purple, and it's just like this milk that's all around you. It's smooth, it's warm if you're hot or if you're cold, and it's cool if you're warm, and it's just moving around you and making you feel safe. And as it touches your skin, you feel more and more calm. So wherever this egg is coming, this egg of light is starting to fill. And as it starts to come into your body, you allow it to open. You open your pores and you allow all of this soft, milky white light to come into your pores and start flowing into your body. And as it flows into your body, you feel any part of you that has any tension or any part of you that has any like pain, starts to just dissolve that, and it goes away and it's replaced by this white milky light. And you can open up what they call in Chinese medicine your mi mam, which is behind your sacrum, sort of between your waist and your hips. And you can open up that space and allow the milky white light to fill your digestive system and to fill your legs. And it's just nourishing you. It comes in and it nourishes all the little cells and all of the little capillaries and the rivers of blood. And it nourishes your heart, and it's nourishing your liver and all these things that are working so hard for us to be alive. It's just coming in and giving it energy and nourishing it and taking away anything that doesn't want to be there. And you just keep breathing deeply in, and you allow this to happen, and nourishing your hips, and it nourishes your joints, your knee joint and your feet joint. And as it comes up, it comes and it nourishes your brain and your brain stem and all these miraculous electrical sort of wirings and system that keep us moving and thinking. It's nourishing all of those and relaxing them. Relaxing your eyes and your retina and your tongue and your throat and your lungs, and filling your lungs with this milky white energy. And you can just let that happen for a few seconds, and I'll give you a moment to imagine that for yourself and allow that to happen for yourself. As that continues, it can continue even as you when you're ready, you start to open your eyes. But that energy can continue, or you can let it go, whatever you would like to do. But you can start opening your eyes and moving your fingers and bringing yourself back into the room. I'm back. This is from A Course in Miracles. I'm going to do a short reading from that first. Principles of Miracles. There is no order of difficulty in miracles. One is not harder or bigger than any other. They are all the same. All expressions of love are maximal. Miracles occur naturally as expressions of love. The real miracle is the love that inspires them. In this sense, everything that comes from love is a miracle. Miracles are habits and should be involuntary. Miracles are habits and should be involuntary. They should not be under conscious control. Consciously selected miracles can be misguided. And six, miracles are natural. When they do not occur, something has gone wrong. And I will just read the last thing, which is the point of what this book is about. What it says: nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. Herein lies the peace of God. So I had just finished college. I was 25. And I was going into my last sort of leg of learning, of this type of learning, sort of acting learning or performing learning. And I had decided to take a clown class from like one of the best clown teachers in the world. He's like, if anybody knows acting, he's the head of movement at Yale School of Drama, which is the best school probably in the US. So anyway, he's this like amazing teacher, and so I decided to take this clown class. And clown is, if you know about acting, clown is like, acting is kind of like maybe bungee jumping, and clown is kind of like skydiving. It is high risk of failure at every moment. So when you wanna take a clown class, you're like, okay, and now I'm going to risk being humiliated for however many hours I am in this experience. And so what clown started to teach me was, like, he would have exercises like go up and be funny. That is the exercise. Go up on stage and be funny. And so we'd be like, oh, okay. So you're kind of walking up, and like, if you think of an idea that's going to make you funny, you're not funny. What makes you funny is it's very difficult to explain, but like one of the guys started just playing with his elbows and going like this, and we were all like, ah! And it's because he was like, oh no, what do I do? Maybe I do this. And you're like, that is so weird. And it just becomes funny because the person is just in this more honest state of trying to grasp at this, like, at some sort of play that he can hold on to and start getting a reaction from. Anyway, this is not what I want to talk about, this is a thread. But the things I learned from clown were: clown is not a character. It is you before anyone ever told you no. Clowns do not exist anywhere. They live inside a box and come out on stage, so in a sense, everything is new to them. Clowns follow their curiosity and joy wherever it leads them. So an example of how a clown might experience a stage over here would be like, we're just gonna play with the idea of a chair is here. So we're gonna have a chair here. Yeah, like this. So a clown might see this chair, and instead of knowing this is what you do in a chair, it might lift it up and go inside chair and look, and it might hang its hat on the chair and build a little house,
and open and come out to the side of the chair, and might be like, oh, this is what a chair is for. And as a clown, you're like, oh yeah, this is what it's for. This is how you sit in a chair. So it's this full reinterpretation of reality that you kind of go into this almost anarchist state. So that is clown. So after clown class, I was led with this idea that curiosity and joy is like the, you know, is what you do as a clown. That's your biggest principle. I was like, this is my life. I want to be a clown for my life. And so I just started following my curiosity wherever it led. And I had, like recently after that class ended, I walked into the Guggenheim Museum in New York, which is like this miraculous building. And I walked in, and from the time I walked in and the time I walked out, my life had completely changed. I walked in as somebody who was just kind of moving through, curious, playful, like, oh, you know, life's this interesting thing and it has ups and downs, and just kind of like half awake, I would say. And I walked out and I walked into a world that was alive, communicating. I looked at a bird for what I could only imagine 20 minutes, but time had escaped. It didn't exist anymore. I mean, no bird stays around that long, so that couldn't even be true. But it seemed like that amount of time, and the way its angles, the head moved, and how it was shifting and changing. I couldn't predict any moment that was going to happen outside of that museum. I looked at the trees, and they were across the street, and it was as if they had come into, they had come to me with their light, and they were right in front of me. It was this like total transformation of perspective. And the exhibition was called Li Ufan Marking Infinity. And it was by an artist that had trained himself in Japan in philosophy, Heidegger and Kierkegaard, and others, among others. And he was Korean. And I don't have enough time to explain the work really well, but I do have some examples of it afterwards if you want to see pictures of it. But basically, in a very brief form, Heidegger has this idea called the art of encounter, where when you enter into, like you walk over, you see the Petras in Jordan, or you see a great art piece. What happens is you come into a space of, you come into this open space of like, where you can't imagine what you're seeing. It has gone outside of what you're able to conceive of before you have met that thing. And in that space, it has gone from being the known, like, I know my computer, I know my life, I know these things around me, and you encounter something that you don't understand, or something beyond you. And in that moment, you're suspended in this, and he called that Dyson. And he said that was the actual state of humans, or the actual state of being. And so that's what he defined as what it means to be. And so in that, so this artwork was basically a setup of encounters all over. And so if I were to take some of the things that I learned there and kind of explain to you it as simply as I could, I would say in this room right now, I have a hierarchy of vision, and anything that is solid, this is solid, this is solid, this is solid, that's what I focus on. I focus on the solid things. But in this museum, these solid things, it would be like rocks placed next to steel with like some incredible lighting, or rocks placed on canvases, or things like this. So in this, I would look at these solid things, but what started to arrive was the shadow and the reflection. And that actually, I was thinking, before I thought the most important thing was the solid thing, but then it was like, no, actually, the infinity is all around us. It's in the reflection, it's in the shadow. If someone walked by the painting or walked by the rock, their shadow completely changed that space entirely. And they had no idea that they were actually you know, affecting the world around them in that way, or their reflection would go along, and reflections follow a person. So if I'm here, your reflection of something, if somebody walked over here, my reflection would follow them. So I started to see that my impact and who I was infinite, and the people around me were infinite, and the space around me was not occupying a singular space, it was occupying this infinite space around me. And so I'm just gonna go into another explanation of this as briefly. But if we were to liken all of this to a painting, in a painting, I was looking for stability in the picture that was being painted, in the yellow of the flower, or the blue of the sea, or the green of the stem. But what I didn't realize was that it was impossible to look for stability in the brush and the paint. Even though when the picture was complete, it appeared as stable. But the vulnerability of the piece itself was still there. It could be painted over by anyone or any event spontaneously. I was looking at the wrong thing. The stability of the painting was in the blankness of the canvas. The stability wasn't out there, it was in here. If I was a painting, that was being painted on by the artist of life. The stability which I so hoped for and prayed for was not in the events happening on it, or the people coming into it, or in the canvas, it was in the canvas itself, me. And underneath all the color and all the shapes and all the things that life came with, the canvas itself was still blank. Then I thought, what do I want to paint on it? Maybe I want to paint it with the green of love and the loyalty of blue, the pink of kindness, the red of heart, the white of God, exuberance of magenta, and that this could be an infinite dance, always retiring back or returning back to what it always and was and its true state of nothing. I realized that there was a space between the brush canvas, and the stroke itself. And if I could live in that space, as opposed to living in the product, the world could be magical. Before the brush of anger comes, I can release it. I can see it and detach from it. This is kind of, so I'm moving kind of quickly because I'm trying to keep a spiritual journey concise. It's difficult, but we're going to continue moving through the collage. So basically what I am speaking about there is, I think with autism, a lot of the world is, and with everyone, when our expectations are broken, it's very painful. And I lived a very painful life of expecting a lot of things that didn't happen, expecting the people to arrive at times where they should have, expecting, even just expecting a movie to be good and it wasn't. Just my whole life was built of these predetermined ideas of what was to be, what should have been, what needs to be right now. And I felt like my life would begin when the thing I expected happened. But I realized that life is doesn't live there. It lives here. It lives right now. It lives between me and the expectation. And that if I can release those expectations and really realize that there is space between me and what I expect, there is space between me and what I want, there is space between me and what I love, that actually there's all this space for things to transform and change and become more beautiful than I ever had thought they could. So a couple more small things that I've learned on my journey. This is more of a journey collage, but when I was thinking about what to speak to you about, a couple ideas came to me, and one of them was the Apple screensaver. I think you all know it's like that one that's like turns into a lot of different colors and then it dissolves and it'll come up over here on the screen and it'll turn into a bunch of colors and it's like these kind of lines. it dissolves, and then it'll go, and then it'll dissolve. And so that is actually, I don't know how to describe it, but kind of like what enlightenment is, or what awe is, or what sort of this space that I'm talking about is. It's kind of like if we looked at that screensaver as a way to curiosity. So if we become curious about something, for me, it's if I become curious about something, I start to dissolve. I start from here, and then as I become more and more curious about that thing, I become deeper and deeper into something that is not me, this in-between space between me and the thing I'm trying to know about, the thing I'm trying to learn about. And as I dissolve, like, it could even be like a bird chirping outside, and I have this moment of like, just like Jenny said, Jenny talked about this, McCune. But she talked about that. Okay. Yeah. I'll be done soon. And then, so you go, that you kind of go into that space, and as you dissolve into that space, and as you come out, you keep coming back and out. It's this like kind of dance of curiosity, dissolving, coming back, curiosity, dissolving, coming back, curiosity, like as if curiosity was the peak of a slide, and every time you go down that slide and you follow your joy or you follow your love, you're thrown back into this other space of presence. And then two more small things, and then we'll be done. I wanted to say that the other thing I learned when I was in Japan, really, was that all these menial things that I thought, oh, I have to eat, I have to breathe, I have to drink, I have to, you know, do these things that were just part of my day, these things that were in the unconscious. I realized one day that from looking at a pair of, if you look at the inside of lungs and you look at a tree, you see that actually lungs are the bronchial tubes of the lungs are exactly the same shape as a tree. And I had this awakening of when I breathe out, they breathe in. When they breathe out, I breathe in. And what that means is half of my lungs are in that tree. I am not a singular thing. I am breathing in and breathing out all the time with my other half, which is this tree. And I realized that water, I was looking at the water coming out of my tap, and as I drink this water, it goes into the rivers and the capillaries of my body and becomes my blood. And in the same way that it runs through the planet, it's running through and it looks the same, just like it does in my body. And that I was drinking this water, that this water was out there, and it's in here, it is me. The water in the ground is me, and the water inside me is me. And then I had another awakening of as a food and looking at the food, and all these times I had thought I was alone, and I look at my food and out there the minerals for all this material is out there. I eat this. It's an act of becoming one. And that the thousands and hundreds, sometimes millions of people that it took for me to have a block of tofu or to have even the smallest, even like a vegetable, to have my squash in my house at this moment, the transportation, the people that grew it, the ground that needed to be, you know, taken care of, all this stuff just for me to have this meal. And I was being supported by hundreds of people, thousands of people in every moment. And so that I realized that these behaviors are sacred and that this is why they are part of us. They're to remind us every moment. And the last thing I'll say, or every moment of who we are and our oneness as each other. And the last thing I'll say is, the last thing I learned was that everything is healing. Everything around me is healing and here to nourish me. The healing of a wound is subconscious. The healing of the earth is happening all the time. Nourishment is around us. The nourishment of a flower, the nourishment of a smile, the nourishment of a sound, a touch, etc. I used to think the world was here to attack me, but as my journey progressed, I realized
It is here to love me. That's it.